This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar. It's 8 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, resisting the wars, conscientious objectors, crossing the line, and doing time. We're live in Studio 2 with author Rosalie Riegel and Judge Robert Wolheim. They're at events tonight and tomorrow with the Women's Independent League for Peace and Freedom. We're looking at war resistors. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Rosalie, I woke up a few weeks ago and went, wow, how many years have we been at war, right? And George Bush opened the Bush Memorial Presidential Library, and we made a few jokes about it. But the thing that strikes me about the war, conscientious objectors during the Vietnam War, we heard about them, but there must be so many during these more recent wars. We never hear about them, people who have gone to jail or prison for objecting to the war. So talk, Rosalie, about your book. Talk about your work. What are you going to be talking about tonight?
Well, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because we need to lift up the voices of people who have said no to war in very strong ways. Actually, conscientious objecting to war predates Vietnam. There were many conscientious objectors in World War I. At one time, they were going to kill them, execute them for being COs.
You mean the federal government was going to?
The federal government was going to shoot them during World War I. And also during World War II, they talked about executing people who, like Judge Wolheim, objected to fighting in wars. I obviously couldn't interview anybody from World War II, but as a one World War I, but as an oral historian, I did interview six men who were COs during the Good War, which is what we called World War II. The war that, as I'm blanking, Howard Zinn said, he found out wasn't so good when he fought in it. Howard Zinn has written about that, I think, very beautifully. Most of those COs from World War II, all but one have died since I interviewed them. So I treasure those interviews. So far, we have a lot of great COs during the Vietnam War who, like Bob Wolheim, are still with us. And as you said, hundreds and hundreds of people since then who have both been COs as far as they wouldn't fight in a war, but mostly people like you and me, Lisa, who have gone to prison because they so much are against the empire building that our country does.
Hey, listeners, we are talking about objecting to the war. We're talking about shutting down the wars. I'm against the next war, putting that out. Listeners, what are you doing against the war? And do you have some kind of project? Or, listeners, are any of you a conscientious objector, or are you related to one? We would love to hear your story. 503-231-8187. Go ahead, Judge Wolheim.
Bob. One of the things that we have in Portland, of course, is the camps that Japanese American citizens went to. There's a person here who's no longer alive, Hideo Hashimoto, who was a Methodist minister and a conscientious objector. And he was interned in one of the camps, and one of his problems there was a way to get out of the camps were for young men to enlist in World War II. And because he was a conscientious objector, he was counseling young men not to enlist.
Mm-hmm. So we are live in Studio 2 with Rosalie Riegel and Judge Robert Wolheim, Bob. We're talking about Rosemary's books. Rosalie's books, Oral Histories of Conscientious Objectors. And tonight, we can also say Dr. Regal, is going to be speaking at the, actually at noon at the Unitarian Church, a luncheon with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Also tonight at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Church. And then tomorrow, a free speech forum at PCC Cascade and another event tomorrow night. Oral Histories of Conscientious Objectors. Judge Bob is a conscientious objector.
Actually, I'm not.
Okay, tell your story.
I am not, I was opposed to the war, but I'm not a pacifist, if that's part of the definition of conscientious objecting.
I'm not sure it is, though.
Okay.
Okay, well, just tell us what happened to you.
Tell your story.
Tell us what happened to you, because we don't even know what you're talking about at this point.
I was a student in college in Portland. I had my student deferment in 1966. That's in 1967. I returned my draft card. This was before the lottery. I was called up for induction because I turned in my draft card. I refused induction. I was prosecuted here in Portland in federal court for refusing induction, sentenced to 18 months, began serving my prison sentence, and the lawyer I had appealed my sentence, which I thought was pretty stupid. I had refused induction. I was guilty of the crime. Part of what my idea was, you served the time for it.
That was absolutely Gandhi's point, actually. Gandhi and Martin Luther King, too. But go ahead.
It turned out there was a pending case before the U.S. Supreme Court, procedurally similar to mine. And it was decided successfully there. My conviction got overturned. It got reversed. I was released from prison. And that was the first time I ever thought about the law, both for doing something like that and also for people who are in my same situation who didn't appeal, serve their full sentence.
And that full sentence could have been 5 years, right?
Yes.
Some people were getting 5 years for being for refusing to serve in the Vietnam War. You know, Bob was inducted because he refused to step forward or cross the line. Most of the people I interviewed are those who did cross lines.
What do you mean?
They trespassed into an army base, a weapons manufacturing plant, a naval shipyard, and committed civil disobedience.
Like the swords into plowshares people.
Right, exactly. So I thought it was really interesting that the draft refusers didn't cross lines, and the title of one of my books is Crossing the Line, Nonviolent Resistors Speak Out for Peace. So lines are important in our lives, lines that tell us to do something or not to do something.
What the government did when they administer the oath of office, they require you, when you step forward, that means you are agreeing with the oath and going into the service.
Like physically stepping forward in a ceremonial manner.
Yes.
This is fascinating.
And by not stepping forward, you're not agreeing with the oath. And actually, it was funny because they knew I was not going to do that, so they didn't. The person administering the oath didn't even take a breath and continued on and say, well, I see you haven't stepped forward, so I'm going to repeat the oath again.
Which is kind of similar to before people get arrested, the police or the military personnel will always say, you know, leave where what you've done.
If you don't leave, you are arrested. So it's really funny because if they know you're going to be arrested, they don't give you too much time not to leave. They're just there with the handcuffs.
Okay, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm live in Studio 2 with a couple of people with gray hair who are talking about getting busted and going to jail, and that fascinates me. I'm putting that out. That completely fascinates me. We are here with Rosalie Regal and Judge Robert Wolheim. We're talking about crossing the line and doing time, conscientious objectors to wars. Let's just say wars. We've got a couple of callers. The number is 503-231-8187. Have y'all demonstrated against the war? Are you guys conscientious objectors? We'd love to hear your story. And I think it's John on the phone. Is that right? Oh, he wiggled off. Oh. Heidi's on the phone. Heidi, what's going on?
Oh, hey, yeah, just yesterday on Democracy Now, there is a gal that is going to jail. I believe it's in the next couple of days. Amy Goodman talked to her husband. She is pregnant, and they have three small children, and the kids are really upset, and I was just heartbroken because I'm a mom myself. And I just didn't know if you guys are aware of the case. I wish I could remember the name of the person.
I am.
But it just seems so timely because of what you're talking about. But then I started thinking about it, and starting conversation, I go to PSU with people, and I thought, what kind of democracy is this? Like, do we really live in a democracy when you say no to war and you still have to go to jail? Like, there's something very, very wrong with that. And the other thing I wanted to add is when this gal that, when she's the one that's going to jail in the next couple of days, when she went to talk to the chaplain because she was really bothered by what she had to do, he basically told her to suck it up. And I was like, there is something very wrong with that.
Well, we also have a rape culture over there in that military, too, even against male soldiers. So, sweetheart, Heidi, sweetheart, Kimberly Rivera, pregnant mom of four, sentenced to military prison for refusing to serve in Iraq. It's on democracynow.org. Heidi, like, what is your take? Like, as an everyday person, and you're not going into the military, maybe, I guess, you know, you're just an everyday person passing through this. I mean, what do you think about that? Like, what should the government be doing to force people to go to the war? Or, you know, do you have an analysis about how the government is even perpetuating the war by forcing people to go through it? I mean, what is your take?
Well, I think if we live in a democracy, we should have the right to say no to war at any time. And just this last weekend, we held a conference at PSU, Palestine Imperialism in the New Middle East, and it opened up a whole new interesting conversation over this aspect of imperialism and the wars that we're perpetrating and all the different ways that is happening. And it's intersectionality. And so I won't participate in the military. I say no to war. I'm going to go out with my sign today on May Day and, you know, free Bradley Manning, free Palestine, and free conscientious objectors and all of those things. All of those issues are tied together. So I think one of the things we can do is to talk about how these things come together and what we can be doing. We need to stand up against the government. But again, I never really thought about it till I heard her husband on the radio, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is a democracy. We can say no. There is something very wrong. And we should, again, the same thing with Guantanamo. Those people have the right to refuse to eat if that's what they're trying to do. And they have no charges against them. And we're still holding them. And Obama gets on the radio and talks about how, well, it's very wrong, and he won't let them, you know, set them free. Like, what is wrong with this country? Like, we have the right to say no. If they put us in jail because we say no to the war machine, then we do not live in a democracy. And people need to start understanding that. And it is people power that's going to change this. And people need to get off their butt and do something. Find a way to change it. And that's pretty much what I have to say.
Right on,
Thank
Heidi.
Thank you very much.
I'm just going to go like this for a minute. That was rocking.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
All right, bye.
Do you know, I was privileged to meet Kimberly Rivera in Colorado Springs on Sunday evening, about 10 hours before she was sentenced to 10 months in prison because she fled to Canada to avoid returning to the military. She became against war. She was not told how she could legally get out. The chaplain, War Resistance League, I believe, is going to start a campaign to educate the chaplains so that they know the law, because there is a law that you can leave the military as a conscientious objector. She was not told about that. I think that's the best things she's got for an appeal in a military tribunal. But military tribunals are very different than our legal system. I interviewed a wonderful, the first CO to the Iraq war who asked to be let out of the military and was not, was instead sentenced because, like Kimberly, he went AWOL. Camille Mejia, he said, I'd been against the war from the beginning, yet I didn't act upon my conscience. I didn't do what I should have done. He wised up. He did do what he should have done. He served time for it, as did a lot of the citizens that I interviewed, because they realize, and I think Heidi does too, that if we don't say no, we're going to lose our chance to say yes. We're going to lose our freedoms in this world.
We're live in studio too with author Rosalie Riegel and Judge Robert Wolheim. We're talking about resisting the wars, conscientious objectors crossing the line and doing time. We have a couple, oh, looks like our caller's wiggled away, but we have a caller? Okay, we have Pam on the line.
Hey, that was quick.
Great, Pam. So Pam knows a little bit about this. Pam, what can people do? What are other options that people have for resisting the war, hon?
Well, as always, one other option, especially if you're just a civilian, is to think about and explore resisting, redirecting some of your federal taxes or all of them.
War tax resistors.
War
and
tax resistance.
You know what,
but
Pam?
It's redirection.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just tax avoidance.
Because somebody was convicted of that 2 weeks ago. They had told the government, well, I'm resisting the war. And then he took the money and bought like a yacht. And that's
we're
talking about.
I'm sorry.
Pam, no, talk about how that works. Talk about how the war tax and what you're saying is redirection works. And because you guys just held your redirection event a couple weeks ago. So talk about that.
Well, it's pretty basic. What we do, it comes from, first of all, we do believe in paying taxes because we believe in supporting each other as a society. And I'm sure, you know, Rosalie knows a lot about this as well.
She's nodding. Yeah. She's nodding.
Okay. Actually, I resist by living below the income level. It's easy to do as an author.
That's right.
Cynical,
and it's arduous, but it is easy at the same time. And a lot of people do that.
But what you guys do is, though, you don't just not pay your taxes. So you send a letter to the feds. Talk about the process, because I think people need to understand
this. There's a lot of different ways to do this. But first, you have to feel in your heart. You have to realize that you're supporting war no matter what you can say. If you're paying your taxes, you are supporting war, because this country runs on war machines, the production of, the selling of, and the use of. And so that's to start with. You decide that you're going to resist a little bit or a lot or all of it. Most people start with just a little bit. And you can write a letter. You can send it with your taxes owed. Or if, like me, you no longer owe taxes, or you don't owe very much.
You're talking about a letter to the Internal Revenue Service.
Well, what you do is you do write a letter that you send along with your taxes, why you're resisting, and why maybe you're paying the rest on, if you are paying some, on in protest. But you also make copies of that letter for your own files, and you also send them to any representatives you care to send them to, your own, other people's, the president,
because
whatever.
You're taking a stand, and you're putting a flag on that stand.
Yeah, but don't deface your
tax form.
Tax form, because you will definitely be
prosecuted.
You'll get a big fine. I think last I heard it was up to $5,000.
So then you guys, you get this all organized, you decide you're going to do it, and then the group comes together and...
We do come together and we decide on, and it's a very difficult decision to make, who we would like to give or redirect our pooled taxes to.
What did you guys decide a couple weeks ago?
Well, we gave them to Bradley Manning.
The Free Bradley Manning Legal Defense Fund?
Absolutely. And we gave them to 1 Million Bones.
I've heard about this 1 Million Bones. Go ahead.
And we gave them to, which is, that is going to be pretty fabulous this spring. And we gave them to Food Not Bombs, which personally is my favorite anarchist organization, hands down, bar none.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, Pam. And like, so this is what I want to get from you. I'm really interested in, we got Bob and Rosalie and you. And you guys, you're from my generation. You're from a slightly older generation. And now
I'm
we have all these.
You.
Well, you don't even know how old I am. Anyway, I did have a tin hat birthday party. Now I'm really super interested in how everyone plugs into the younger generation that's actually physically getting sucked into that war machine.
Rosalie should talk about that. Because in my opinion, it's the younger people, the people from the first Iraq War, the people who are now getting out of multiple deployments now. It's the people up at Coffee Strong in Tacoma, Washington. I think it's Tacoma.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the younger people who are reaching the kids in high schools. And also parents, it is what parents of small children espouse and do and talk about in their own homes as well.
All right.
You know, so I'll hang up here. I really want to listen to Rosalie and I'm
well,
sure
I hope you can come
thank
this
you so
evening.
Thank you so much, Pam.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, I do want to say that in the book Crossing the Line, Nonviolent Resistors, Speak Out for Peace, we have a whole chapter on tax resistance, history of tax resistance, what people are doing now, some really kind of dramatic stories of couples who have lost, only couple I know of, who lost their house with tax resistance and the happy ending. The good thing about a lot of the tax resistors is, like Pam, they're making a statement with it, redirecting their taxes. Susan Crane in California did some very creative actions about on this whole redirection thing. So, but let's talk about the young people.
This thing about more young people killing themselves than being killed in the war, I can't get past that. I'm stuck there. I can't deal with that.
Yeah. I think somehow we gray hairs, white hairs, are not getting to the young people. Father Lou Vitale of Pace Bene, a Franciscan peace group, is so impressed with young people. I just spoke with him again last night. But yet, when I interviewed him, he said he had been working in San Francisco with people who were like resisting the Iraq War by filling and this is nonviolent when you think about it, because nonviolence means not hurting people. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean not hurting Volkswagens. They filled a Volkswagen with cement and put it in the middle of the intersection at the San Francisco Stock Exchange. You know, really cool, creative actions that stopped San Francisco.
I was just going to say, what happened when they did that? Did you tell the story? Because
yeah.
I didn't hear about
okay.
that. That's
they are arrested, of course, but often they're not prosecuted because the feds don't want people to know about this. You know, so they really try. I mean, the media does not. We don't get the kind of media now that we did during the Vietnam War. And that's why I think these shows like you're doing, Lisa, are so important.
Remember when there was the media had a blackout on images of coffins? I'm sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas during the Vietnam War, many of us were incensed and moved to action by what the reporters were
right.
doing in the field. They didn't have embedded journalists with all their stuff being taken. That's why it's so good that we've got you and Amy Goodman and people that do get the word out.
I'm flattered.
But Lou said, when he's talking about this action at the stock exchange, he was a little worried that working class people would be hurt. So we asked this union guy, and the guy says, well, you know, we go to jail or we go to work on the BART. It's the Mercedes and MG, what? You know, fancy sports cars that are getting tied up by this blockade. Lou and many people in San Francisco were arrested, and Lou's hands are featured on the cover of the book that Bob is in.
And the book is Doing Time for Peace, Resistance, Family, and Community.
Yeah, and that community is important. I think Pam's community, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
We love you. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a wonderful peace group in Portland. I actually spoke at an anti-war rally here in 2004, right after I interviewed Bob. So Portland is blessed with lots of peace community, and I hope they can continue to reach out
to the young people, such as I did last night at PSU. We had wonderful young people there interacting with people who had had experience for years, and I think that's great.
And well, no, go ahead, Bob.
I mean, WILF has been around for a tremendously long time. Yeah. And while I was in prison, it happened to be during Christmas, and one of the things that WILF did was to publish a list of people who were in federal prisons for various anti-war things. And I got, you know, probably 100 holiday cards from people all over the country who were wishing me well, and strangers, and just because WILF published those names, probably WILF and War Resisters mm-hmm. League, and I actually still have those cards.
Now, we're talking about political prisoners. That's the way I would define that.
Yes.
Okay, and we have a couple callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Mike on the phone. Oop, Mike wiggled away. We have Joanne. Joanne, where are you at with this, the War Resisters?
Oh, golly, that... I can't even speak. I'm so overwhelmed by the question. Well, first of all, when I heard about the Bush Library, and I thought this morning was, oh, another altar for war, another altar to continue war. And then I had some others on, but anyway, one of the things I wanted to ask you, darling dears everywhere, how can we reach young people? I don't know. I think they're brainwashed and propagandized and all that ugly stuff while they're still in the mother's womb. But anyway, I'll get off the air.
Thank you, darling. Thanks for calling, Joanne. I actually think Joanne's incredibly articulate, and she puts stuff on the table. She puts the really hard issues on the table. So how do you reach the young people? And I'm thinking of the Raging Grannies some few years ago, 5 years ago, here in Portland, and Martha Odom, KABU producer, a lot of incredible local people who were elderly, their grandmas who would take rocking chairs and stick them outside the Military Recruitment Center on Broadway, and I loved it when they did that. I think that was kind of maybe more when we invaded Afghanistan. Hey, Raging Grannies, give us a call because we want you to chime in on this too. We are live in Studio 2 with Rosemary Regal and Judge Robert Wolheim. We're talking about war resistors, conscientious objectors, all the ways that people try to do something to shut the wars down. Pamela Lee called. She was talking about the war tax resistors. She mentioned Coffee Strong. This tradition of GI coffee shops is a big, big deal. And Coffee Strong was opened a few years ago up by Joint Base Lewis McChord in Washington State. I'm telling you, our pals in the Striker Brigade, those people are the cannon fodder of these current wars. And my heart aches for all the horrible things that have happened around the Striker Brigades. Here in Oregon, our National Guard's getting sent to Afghanistan again in the next few weeks. Like, I'm looking at that. I still don't understand why. What are we doing there? You know, anyway, so this is Talk Radio, number to call. Are you working against the war? Are you a conscientious objector, or are you related to one? 503-231-8187. And we have Sean. Well, let's see what Sean has to say. Sean, what's going on?
Hey, good morning. Hey. I'm embarrassed to say that as a teenager in the 80s, I bought into the whole Cold War thing. And so I was actually serving as an infantryman when the Berlin Wall came down. And about a month later, the United States invaded Panama. And that really rocked my world because, like, that didn't make any sense to me. You know, I could sort of rationalize the Cold War, you know, protecting the world, you know, from totalitarianism, blah, blah, blah. But when the wall came down, I thought, okay, you know, we're going to have a peace dividend now. We're going to have
The peace dividend. I remember that, too. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm not laughing.
Well, yeah, you remember that. There was going to be a Marshall Plan for America. We were going to rebuild all of America's cities, you know, new infrastructure and all that kind of good stuff.
Love and, all shiny and new. I'm sorry. Love Boat theme. Go ahead.
But it's been weird. It's in a way, I would say, I feel like I've been in prison ever since that invasion. Especially then following quickly after the Panama invasion, there was the Gulf War, and then everything has just gone downhill since then. Yugoslavia, Somalia, Afghanistan, Iraq. So my question for your guests would be, for those of us who feel kind of like we've been in prison anyway for the last 23 years or so, what would be a good example of an action, you know, that someone could involve themselves in, you know, nonviolent preferably, I guess, but, you know, not necessarily so, but an example of an action that could get yourself a good 10 or 20 years in a federal penitentiary? Because I think a lot of us out here feel like we've been in prison anyway, so we really have nothing to lose. So what would be a good example of an
action? Sean, you're tough. You're a tough guy. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
He's pushing the envelope, as we say, pushing the envelope. Yeah. What are some of the big prison terms people have gotten and what they do to get them?
People have been sentenced to 10, 20 years in prison. We have a huge trial coming up in Knoxville, Tennessee on May 7th for Plowshares activists. Most people, I only talk about nonviolent activism. Nonviolent revolutions have succeeded much more than violent revolutions, and you can read all about it with Erica Chenoweth's book, Chenowith, How Nonviolent Revolution Does Work. Most people think you only make changes with guns. People that I talk to realize that you need to work in community, starting small. Don't start with what we call a plowshares action.
Where you're breaking into a facility and dumping a vial of your own blood on the missiles or whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah. Don't start with that. That needs preparation, training, education, most of all, community. Phil Berrigan, who was kind of the grandfather of the Plowshares movement.
Father Philip Berrigan, yes. Go ahead.
He said, we're all in minimum security. In other words, as our last caller said, and I hate to say it, I was in education for 33 years, teaching English at the college level. Education pretty much teaches us to obey. Mm-hmm. The people I spoke to, the conscientious objectors, learned that you have to say no, and that if we don't say no, we'll lose our chance to say yes. Mm. So you start small by saying no in a nonviolent resistance action, say up at Bangor Air Force Base, the National Guard facility here. You can easily get arrested for crossing a line and not have to do a lot of time. But you need to do it in community. So get with the peace groups in Portland. They know how to do it.
Awesome. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in Studio 2 with author Rosalie Riegel and Judge Robert Wolheim. They are at events tonight and tomorrow, sponsored by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And also, let me just go through the list really quickly, because this is juicy, and I think that people need to come. And I think that a lot of us have been involved in the anti-war movement, but it's so long. You know what I'm saying? It's really easy to take your eye off that ball. And I'm remembering in 1990, me and my best friend, Emily Hemstreet, dressed up. We were a singing group, the Mothers of God, and we went to this gigantic demonstration against the U.S. invasion of Iraq in downtown Portland, 10,000 people. We invited people to come dressed like Barbara Bush. And so we were dressed like Barbara Bush with, you know, we had wigs and funny clothes on, and we got beat up by the police. And I got beat up by four police. We had to go to counseling. But, a lot of us have had this issue, and that was in 1990. Okay, so where have we been? And it's so interesting about this war. Currently, I'm really interested in Bob and Rosalie, the difference between maybe what people said about their war experience then versus young people that are coming out of the war now. Because, of course, as we're talking about conscientious objectors, the one that we know the best is probably facing a life sentence. And we are so strongly in support of Bradley Manning that, I mean, we look at that guy. He's I don't want to say poster child, because I don't know what that phrase means, but we all look at Bradley Manning and we're like, wow, that guy did something real, and he could be, is he off death row, or what's his status now?
Yeah, I think we feel powerless about Manning, but don't give up. Lots of people are working all around the world. As I think we said earlier, the military trials are much, Bob can maybe help me on this, I think they're much less just than anything that we have in our own judicial system. But we have to stand together. my subtitle, Resistance, Family, and Community. We have to say no in creative ways, like your Barbara Bush demonstration. I hope you don't get beat up by the police.
There are things you might be able to do to avoid that, by the way, but go ahead.
Lots of them. And, you know, the police are not the enemy. They're working class stiffs, and many of them. They would love to have this money redirected towards our cities, our roads, our climate infrastructure. So, you know, it's not off the pigs, as we used to hear in the Vietnam War. It's let's get America off this empire footing.
One of your callers talked about a war going on for, you know, 23 years. We've been pretty much at a continuous state of war, certainly from World War II on. Funding may go up and down. Issues may be different. But the military's basic function remains, you know, teaching young people how to kill on command. And one, you mentioned the suicides. One of the problems that happens is not knowing what to do when you come back to society or when you're still in with what you've done. It's the nature of the military. It's not to build. It's to
destroy. Yeah. And, you know, the thing about the – they used to say – people used to say, support the troops. If the federal government did that, it would be revolutionary. And again, we talked about Joint Base Lewis-McChord. There's a huge escándalo about the fact that the military is not really giving people the counseling that they need.
No.
And it's taken practically baseball bats against the Pentagon and the Joint Chiefs of Staff just to try to get them to, especially with the National Guard members, right, here in Oregon. The National Guard isn't getting – they're going to war. They're being exposed to war. There's a bunch of moms in the Oregon National Guard, too, and they're coming back, and they're not getting the services that the, quote, active duty officers are. Another issue I have is the rape culture. I mean, I can't get away from that. It's like – you know, people were saying we can't let women serve in combat because they would be subject to rape. Well, who knew? It was the other soldiers. It was their commanding officers raping them and other men, too. Yeah.
One of the things that I've learned as a state court judge is a development maybe in the last 3 or 4 years of the states developing veterans treatment courts so that to address the special needs of veterans and to realize what they need in order to what they need so that they won't get involved in the criminal justice system.
Because we had a veteran get killed by the Portland police here just a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, yeah.
Yeah, we had something like that happen in Saginaw last summer because the poor guy was mentally ill. And there just, you know, there was no treatment available for him. But, you know, we need to work, and there has been some wonderful work done nationally on counter-recruitment. Because who is recruited to the military? People who feel they don't have any other option. There's no way that the government is going to bring back the draft. They just make everybody register, and if you don't register, you can't get financial aid. So it's like a no-brainer.
Incredible.
And I think I've known 3 since the new draft law. Who said, no, I will not register. And they were able to access a fund or scholarship so that they could continue to go to college. Very, very rare. So we need to work on counter-recruitment, on opting out. Oh, there's all sorts of things you should do a whole show on it. Because that's one really good way, I think, to involve young people in the decisions about their future.
We have in the past done many shows about counter-recruitment, and that has gone on for decades. And there's some really bedrock people in the community that have worked on that traditionally. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Dr. Rosalie Riegel talking about her book. Her books, she's got 2, but she's got a book of oral histories of conscientious objectors, Crossing the Line and Doing Time. Today at noon, Dr. Riegel's going to be at the Unitarian Church for a luncheon with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Tonight, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Unitarian Church has her back. She's going to be speaking about the book, I believe, the two books. And then tomorrow at noon, Free Speech Forum at PCC Cascade. That's the one in North Portland, right? And then tomorrow night, there's a very important event. It's a private event, and maybe you're going to go. If you go to these other events, you might be able to talk your way into the Thursday event. But as you said, we're talking about building community around conscientious objectors and objecting to the war. And even though the president has announced that, you know, the war's over or something like that, it's really not. And we have a couple of callers. Let's go to those phone lines. We have Gordon on the phone. What do you think, Gordon? What's going on?
Oh, good morning. So I like what the guy said a little while back. You know, we're free here out in the public and stuff like that, but really we're political prisoners as well. I mean, on a daily basis, we're political prisoners. And it's sad, and it's frustrating for sure. And and I like what that one lady said about the new library, the war memorial,
the altar to the war. Yeah, Joanne said that.
The altar to the war, and Joanne is, you know, a lot of times is right on. And you know, and it's just frustrating to be here and be supposedly free when, in reality, if you really think about it, the United States and Palestine are two of the largest open air prisons in the world. I mean, if you really think about the United States, we are a prison country. We are a country that, and they're putting fences around us, all around us, you know. And so, and even if trying to get out of this country to live somewhere else, it's so difficult, and they drain you financially to where when you leave, you have nothing. You know, you have to give everything up to get out of this country. And so, you know, it's frustrating. We just try to keep the positive light and stuff. But I also wanted to mention, you know, the war within our own backyard. We have a war at KABU. You know, I just find out that on Saturday we have a meeting because the board of directors of KABU wants to prevent unionization, and on one of the most progressive radio stations in the world. And here we are, the board of directors is trying to hold us hostage to their own political agenda. And I think we all need to step up and get over to Tabor on Saturday, check out the website, and support our progressive radio station people and try to weed out this
element,
horrible thing, these elements that are creating this union bashing in our own board of directors of KABU.
Thanks for calling, Gordon. Gordon's talking about the KABU General Membership Meeting. It's Saturday, May 4th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street. Thanks for calling. And we have another caller as well. Bruce. We have Bruce on the phone. Bruce, what's going on?
Oh, good morning. Well, I'm a conscientious objector.
Great.
And what I do to take care of myself, I'm involved with the Oregon Fellowship of Reconciliation. And, you know, that's the world's oldest and largest peace and justice organization, started right before World War One.
What do you guys do over there? Do you have, like, activities that you do?
Well, you know, there's, four chapters here in Oregon. There's one in Portland, one in Salem, Corvallis, and Eugene. And, you know, you can go to the website, ofor.org, and get a lot of good information. Then I've also become involved in the Alternatives to Violence Project.
Ooh, I never heard of it. Talk about that.
That was started back in New York State in a prison. Lifers wanted to have some kind of training on alternatives to violence, and they asked the Quakers about that, and the Quakers started a program. So this is all a Alternatives to Violence Project. It's all grassroots. And I've done all the trainings, and so now I've been going. So now I'm sort of like a trainer in training. So I'm a facilitator of AVP. And so it takes place throughout the country and the world, and like I say, it's all grassroots, doesn't cost anything, and so go into prisons, community, you know, out into the community. There's quite a number of AVP folks here in Oregon. We do work in Sheridan and at OSP, here in Salem.
Wow. How many conscientious objectors are there in Oregon? Is there a sense about that?
I don't know.
But what I hear you saying is you're working with a lot of people that are incarcerated, not just necessarily people from the peace movement.
Right. Well, then also, I think being in the streets is really important.
Because that's where the veterans are.
16 years here in Salem, we have been having a peace vigil downtown. That's happening again today. And that was started by the Friends meeting and here in town.
Bruce, which war are you a conscientious objector to?
Vietnam War.
Okay.
You know, I think this is a wonderful day to be on this program because it's May Day. There's a big rally today in Portland. There is a even bigger rally in Salem, I believe. There will be rallies in Chicago, where I'm living now when I'm not on the road. And I think this is an important day to connect all the issues. I know almost all the progressive organizations in the Portland area have supported the rally, which the march starts at 4, the gathering is at 2, and the rally is at 3. I hope you have some information about it. I don't have anything written down. Mm-hmm. But I think people should try to get out today. Build the community. You know, ask your buddy. Don't be afraid to ask your neighbor to come. It's going to be a gorgeous day.
I want to say this on that, too. It's May. It's going to be Mother's Day. And for so many years, I heard people say, oh, that's just a Hallmark holiday. It's like a Hallmark card thing. No, May Day was actually started as an anti-war, basically a statement against the war. It's an anti-war thing, and it's been co-opted over the years. But when we first invaded these countries in the Middle East, there were a couple of bedrock moms in Salem that celebrated Mother's Day with a big anti-war statement at the state capitol. Which is a big deal because our state capital is in a cow town. It's far from where most people live. So stuff takes place down there where people don't necessarily per se have easy access to letting their lawmakers know what they think. So I think I just want to put that out. If anybody's organizing an anti-war event for Mother's Day, I'd love to hear about it. Oh, and here, thank you, Miss Kathleen. Kathleen Stevenson, the Morning News and Public Affairs Director of the Stars, just brought in the information about the May Day rally and march today. As Dr. Riegel said, 2 p.m. people are gathering at O'Brien Square. Now, that's Hysteria Park, right? No, Paranoia Park. So that's right by Powell's Books. Don't go to the wrong park now, okay? O'Brien Square at 9th and Stark at 2 p.m. Rally at 3 p.m. March at 4 p.m. International Workers' Day, no human being is illegal. People over profit. You know, because the other piece of this is that there's a convergence this weekend of the people who are looking at overturning the corporations are people issue. And corporations and the anti-war movement, they're absolutely intricately linked. So we have this information about the march today. It is May Day. We're live in the studio with a couple of very juicy anti-war activists. We're talking with Dr. Rosalie Riegel about her books of oral history of conscientious objectors, Doing Time for Peace and Crossing the Line. We have a couple of callers. Let's go. Let's grab them. Matt, what's going on with you today?
Oh, not much. A quick story about Marine Corps boot camp. I went in 1999 in San Diego, during the peace years. It was sort of one of the more Orwellian moments. They had like half of the company is in one of their big auditorium style classrooms, and they're in the middle of one of their classes on something. And then a drill instructor runs from the back of the room to the one who's in the front and whispers something in his ear. And then they all look real serious for a second, and they close the doors, and they say, "All right, recruits, we've just been given word that something awful has happened somewhere, and we're going to war with somebody, and we're going to accelerate all of your training. And we understand that, you guys signed up during peacetime, and a lot of you are in non-combat MOSs, and, you might just be doing this for the college money. So if anybody here, thinks that you're a conscientious objector or maybe that you might not be able to perform the duties required of you in a combat situation, we're going to have you all put your heads down on the desks right now and you raise your hand."
Oh, my God, we did that in kindergarten. Remember so that? It's a secret ballot in kindergarten.
Yeah, exactly. So the you know, of course, the whole thing's a scam. Lucky for me, you know, I gotten a heads up for some guys, you know, hey, if they pull this on you, don't raise your hand.
Oh, my God.
So it turns out, of course, you know, that it's not true, and anybody who does raise their hand then, of course, gets singled out for special treatment. But, you know, the lesson is, you know, you signed your name, so suck it up, buddy.
Exactly, the sign your name thing. Yeah. Matt, I hear there's a little baby, there's a child in the background. Now, how are you doing? How are you?
Oh, I'm great.
Good.
I'm wonderful.
Good. All right.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that is not known about all those ROTC programs is you can say no. We have all this junior ROTC all over Chicago. Those kids can still say no. They do not have to go into the military, but they're not informed of their rights, just like Kimberly Rivera wasn't informed that she had the right to be a conscientious objector when she was in the Army, that you can change your mind. You can learn about war and decide not to fight. You can learn about war and come down and join a peace march. You can learn about war and cross a line and commit civil disobedience.
Thanks a lot for calling, Matt.
My pleasure.
And we have another caller. Let's grab that other caller. Franny. Franny, what's going on? Are you there? Vernon, are you there? Hello. We are having some production opportunities going on. Franny? Hello. What you got
good
today,
morning.
Franny?
So I'm wondering about what does it mean to be arrested when you're involved in nonviolent resistance? Because I hear about people getting arrested. I don't know what that means. What are the implications of that further on for a person? And, what you know, it seems frightening to me. I haven't really heard anybody talk about what happened.
All right. Thanks for calling. We're going to grab that answer. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, of course, it is frightening to be arrested, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, to learn what it's like. Learned to be arrested. Basically, as I said, I only looked at nonviolent resistors. I don't want to talk about people that break windows, because that kind of arrest is sort of havoc creating. The people that I spoke to have planned actions, and they are usually quite gently arrested. The cops will ask you to leave the place where they think you shouldn't be, and you don't leave. And then you have two options. You can go limp, which means you will get another charge. You will get charged with resisting arrest. I don't go limp.
Those officers are such delicate flowers.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I do not go limp. If the officer, if I'm lying down in a die-in, for instance, or some dramatic action.
That was funny, though. You just said, if I lay down in a die-in, I'm not. That's just cracking me up. Go ahead.
Anyway, if they ask me to get up, I get up.
Right.
And because I do not want to get another charge. Usually, it depends on where you commit civil disobedience. If you do it in a federal court, you get a federal charge. If you do it in front of a public place, you may get arrested by the local cops. So, I mean, there's a lot of ramifications. And I think sometimes my books, I see them as how-to books. Mm-hmm. How to get arrested, how to go to trial.
Yeah.
Bob's trial was a non-trial, as it turned out. You might want to talk about that, Bob.
We are starting to run out of show, though. We've got 3.5 minutes. I'd love to hear it from you, Bob.
When you're taken physically by the officer to another place where you get processed, you get fingerprinted, photographed, depending on the nature of the offense, you may be in jail. Mm-hmm. It may take 4 hours to process you in jail. One time when I was moving through Los Angeles, it took a day. Mm-hmm. So it all depends.
But it's all very planned. It's all very specifically planned.
And one of the things I want to say about Rosalie's book, in terms of the resistance, family, and community, they really go together. Because so I do this individual act of refusing. It's very scary, but it was because of family, both friends and my regular family of support, and community support that makes that personally scary situation okay.
I have to say this too, and we are running out of show, but when I was arrested, like many, many years ago, there were so many of us arrested at this. Dr. Riegel's talking about, you know, if you're going to do your first action, make it a simple one. Don't make it something where you're climbing into a federal facility and damaging something, because that's where you're really going to get popped.
Right.
But when me and my friends were all arrested years ago, there were so many of us arrested at once that they had to stick us all on TriMet buses. They put us in handcuffs on the TriMet bus and then took us over to the cop shop in Southeast Precinct and just cattle called us all through the whole thing. So it was really, it took about a day. We did get beat up before we were arrested, and that was a bummer. But this is what I want to say about this Franny, okay? Crossing the line, doing time for peace, resistance, family, and community. The people you get arrested with are people who are going to be special friends of yours for the rest of your life. And that's a really weird thing to point out, but that's kind of the whole point. When we as a community go out and make a really concrete action like that, it means something, and we're building community. That is nature's way of saying that we are running out of show. Dr. Riegel's books may be purchased at the following events: Wednesday, May 1st, noon, Unitarian Church, luncheon with Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Tonight, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Unitarian Church. It's going to be
At Powell's.
And at Powell's. Okay. I don't have that here. Thursday, May 2nd, noon to 2, free speech forum at PCC Cascade. This information is going to be at the front desk for people who want to know more. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guests, Rosalie Riegel and Judge Robert Wolheim. Tonight, the Unitarian Church, all that wonderful stuff. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we just us on the show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Hey, KBOO General Meeting, Saturday, May 4th, 1 to 4 at Tabor Space. Stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis in Albany. The time is 9 o'clock straight up. Coming up next, Joe Clement hosts a special May Day Political Perspectives about the Industrial Workers of the World, or IWW, a union for all workers with the revolutionary aspiration of abolishing the wage system. A few members of the Portland branch of the IWW will be his guests. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an update on the rising death toll from the garment factory fire in Bangladesh. And at 11, it's The Bike Show, bringing you news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond.
Tune in Wednesday, May 1st at 6 p.m. for the monthly episode of Treasures from the KBOO Vault. This month, we'll listen to Ursula K. Le Guin, Portland-based writer and all-around cultural icon. We'll hear an interview done in 1993 at the release of the book Blue Moon Over Thurmond Street, and we'll hear her read a story recorded in September 1992 from Sea Road. That's this Wednesday, May 1st at 6 p.m. here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Particles on the Wall, an exhibit of the story of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation and the human environmental tolls of the nuclear age. The exhibit is being held at the EcoTrust Building, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. There is a reception on opening night, Friday, May 3rd, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. that is open to the public. The exhibit will show through June 14th. More information about this exhibit and opening night can be found online at the KBOO Community Radio Events page at kboo.fm.
What's your name?
Sam Scarlett.
What's your religion?
The IWW.
That ain't no religion.
The only one I got.
Who's your next of kin?
I don't have any.
Well, who's your best friend?
Big Bill Haywood.
He's in here with you.
He's still my best friend.
What's your nationality?
None.
Well, what country are you a citizen of?
I am a citizen of industry.
Where is your home?
Cook County Jail.
Before that?
County Jail, Cleveland, Ohio.
And before that?
City Jail, Akron, Ohio.
Look, are you a citizen?
No, I'm an industrial worker of the world.
You are tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. I am your host for this Political Perspectives Hour, which will be a call-in show. We are going to be talking about the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Grand Old Industrial Band. I am joined here by Frank, Tom, and Jill, members of the local Portland branch of the Industrial Workers of the World. We are here to talk about the relevance of the IWW in labor history, its continued presence in the labor movement, and the meeting of May Day. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I want to start a little bit about hearing some of your how y'all got into the IWW, what it meant for you as a worker when you were presented with this opportunity to join. Tom?
Well, I grew up in the south side of Chicago. Both my parents are in AFL-CIO unions. For me, radicalism was not so much a product of any specific theoretic initially, though that came later, but it became more of a product of seeing the situations my parents were in and understanding that despite the fact that their unions gave them a lot of rights in their workplaces and in specific situations, other jobs, for instance, my father worked as a programmer, did not, and were also unrepresented by a union. But on top of that, the unions they were in did not seem to really – they seemed to always seem to have complaints about them, and it seemed to me like if it was an organization that was supposed to have solidarity through and through, that it would have been something that they would have had a lot less at least complaints, not to say none. And so for me, finding something like the IWW, doing my own research, it just seemed like it was a great fit, seeing its history. But more importantly, at the time, being like 2005, 2006, seeing some of the campaigns that were really hitting across the country, and then further on, seeing things like the retail workers stuff that was happening in Minneapolis with Jimmy John's and Starbucks out in New York, really made me realize, being a retail worker, that it was something that could represent me and that it was